Well, we're kind of winding down the historical portion. One of the blessings for me, as I've gotten into the more recent ARP history, is similar to what we have benefited from in studying church history in a broader sense, which is realizing that the Lord's people have been very similar throughout the history of the church, and the Lord has faithfully, persistently carried out his promise that he would build his church and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. It gives us, I think, or at least it gives me a little bit of a reminder not to be overly distressed. Maybe distress isn't the right word, but not to panic when things seem to be going wrong in a particular moment of the church, but to remember that the Lord is working and to remain faithful. So we have the sheet in front of us, which will take us really from 1822, when the Synod of the South was formed, which became one contiguous ecclesiastical body with what is now called the General Synod of the ARP. Some name changes, but the same body, the same organization. Then next week, our brother Dave will introduce and take us through the document on Hopewell's history in particular. Something that Charles Bradley originally put together some 25 years ago, and has then been updated. Dave's done some work on that, and then, like for those who have been around Hopewell for 50 years or so or more, if we can get the or mores to contribute as well. There are some who can just tell you what it was like when they're a boy, and what they've seen since then, that's a great blessing. We America is obsessed with the young people. When I came from a church in which we were continually reminded to listen to the young. It's interesting because I read the Bible and I'm continually reminded there to listen to the old. hearing just what the Lord has brought congregations through is a review of his faithfulness, great blessing. So to the ARP, for the first 90 years or so, from 1822 to 1912, what is now known as the ARP was known then as the Associate Reformed Synod of the South, or if you're just reading during that time period, often it'll just be referred to as Synod of the South. From 1912 to 1935, they dropped the of the South, and it was Associate Reformed Synod, and then in 1935, they adopted the name that we currently have, the General Synod of the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church. All that is to say, what I said a couple minutes ago, that this is the same body from that time. You'll notice the date on the sign out there is 1820, which predates the Synod of the South by 2 years. At its founding, the Associate Reformed Synod of the South was largely composed of seceders who came from Ireland after America gained its independence. In our kind of study of how the ARP came about, we studied the seceders and the Covenanters, and they were proportionately it wasn't necessarily that equal, but following the revolution, a number of Presbyterians in Ireland recognized the advantages of being American, and they came and settled largely in the South. As such, the Reformed Synod of the South took on more of the seceder concerns than the covenanter concerns. In case we don't remember, those are especially purity of worship, free offer of the gospel. You remember the Marrow controversy. What do we mean when we say free offer of the gospel? Anyone? Mary.
The gospel goes out to everybody.
That's right. That's right. Anything to add? You don't have to overqualify it. Overqualifying is how there came to be the Marrow controversy, right? You ended up with hyper-Calvinists who said, yeah, you don't tell people that Christ died for them. Basically, you know, there was this kind of hyper-Calvinism that said that there are only particular people who can be saved. They would be guarded in their language and the offer of the grace of Christ to all in a way that the scripture is not guarded in its language. And so the free offer of the gospel is important to the Marrow men. The word coming from that book, Marrow of Modern Divinity, talked about that probably a month or longer ago. I think we missed some weeks in there. So, purity of worship, free offer of the gospel, personal holiness as a loving response to and necessary part of salvation, but never as a condition for being saved, the freedom of particular churches to identify to their presbyteries the men whom they wish to call as ministers. You know, that came out of the conflict regarding Ebenezer Erskine. But those were some of the seceder concerns and all that, just to kind of give you a reminder of what it means when we say that there was this large influx of seceders. You know, these were their primary concerns, and so these became primary concerns in what is now the ARP. Several issues immediately facing the Synod reinforced its Southern identity. You can refer to the South, and you're talking about a geographical region, and then you can refer to the South, and you're talking about almost an ethnic group, a particular identity group. One of the great concerns in the first generation of the Synod of the South was they were not growing very quickly. If you remember back to when we looked at the Scottish Reformation, when we looked at the seceder movement in Scotland, the Associate Church, when we looked at the Covenanter movement in Scotland and the Reformed Church, one of the things that had happened every time there was one of these new Reformation-type movements is that there had been a very rapid spread of the gospel, planting and growing of churches, increase of presbyteries to where you needed synods. And that being the history that they had experienced for the previous couple of centuries, they kind of expected that the Lord would do that again. But that is not what happened immediately at the beginning of the Synod of the South or the beginning of the ARP. One of the problems was economic disparity in the nation. The North was getting richer and the South was getting poorer overall. Was sending many Reformed Presbyterians to the Northwest. Now, we say Northwest, and we mean like Seattle or Oregon. They said Northwest, they meant Pittsburgh. And to this day, there are a number of Reformed Presbyterians, especially Covenanter Reformed Presbyterians in the Pittsburgh area. They are the, you know, they are more the RPCNA, and they are our closest denominational relatives. In fact, we're having our synod there by where their college and seminary are, Beaver Falls in the Pittsburgh area, next year, 2019. Well, it's hard to grow a church when your members keep moving across the country. You know, I've had friends who pastor in military towns, and you get a young family and they're stationed there for a couple of years, and you know, they really integrate, very vigorous, become, you know, essential to the life of the church, and then they're reassigned. And you know, it's if you're trying to grow, we're very kind of locally mindset, with a very local mindset, that can be discouraging. But if you're reading church history and you see the ebb and the flow throughout church history in particular places, and that Christ's work is never wasted, then you can adopt the perspective that if the Lord makes you a congregation or a synod that is used to strengthen other places where he sends people there for a time, you know, they come over from Ireland or Scotland and they're in the south for a time, and then he sends them somewhere else that's a frontier area, and that place is much strengthened in worship and doctrine, in godliness, in the society, then you wouldn't find it so discouraging. You know, it's interesting to read histories, because history is usually pulled together by one guy, right? And you want to, you know, you wonder, unless it's well documented enough, whether they were as discouraged as the man writing the history was. Sorry. Hi, Ezekiel. I thought you were asking a question, buddy. Okay. So that was one thing. You know, one of the problems with the cause of the moving was increasing resentment towards the North, or at least consolidation of identity in the South. Now, this was complicated by the fact that you remember one of the reasons last week that the Synod of the Carolinas wanted to withdraw, and the other synod, Scioto, or what is now Ohio, had already withdrawn, were these latitudinarian, you know, we would say liberal, beliefs about open communion and singing man-made or man-invented texts in worship. And so what had happened was that they viewed the more progressive churches as establishing an ecclesiastical climate, a church climate, in which people who wanted their own way more and more were becoming less and less likely to join conservative churches in the South. Yeah, it was more difficult for Southern Presbyterian Church to say, well, these are the associate Reformed Presbyterian doctrines and practices, when they said, well, the associate Reformed Presbyterians in New York don't do that. And so it weakened you know, commitment to the practices agreed on by the churches and the elders and the synod. And so there was some movement out of the denomination by those who came to see those things as less important. That happened fairly quickly over the course of a generation. At one point, it was so important that all of these congregations voted to approve the resolution of the Synod of the Carolinas requesting dismissal. And then, within 20 or 30 years, it was unimportant enough that it became an inhibitor of growth in the churches. Finally, the only Reformed Presbyterian seminary at the time was in New York and was going along with the Northern churches among the Associate Reformed. It was becoming difficult to produce or obtain ministers with the historic Associate Reformed views and practices to grow the church by evangelism. This was complicated or made even harder by the fact that within the first 15 years of the synod, so between 1822 and 1837, several ministers died, and even two theological students in whom they were invested and were being trained for the ministry in the South were taken also by the Lord. Then the seminary was lost altogether when the Northern Church joined with the General Assembly, and there was something of, as far as I could tell, a heist. They took the Synod of New York, which was still Associate Reformed, and although not in union now with what at this point was called the Synod of the West and the Synod of the South, the Synod of New York was still more conservative than the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church, the United States of America. And the General Assembly came and they took the entire library from what is now called Union Seminary. And there was a court battle over the books, and eventually the Synod of New York got its books back. Now, the Synod of the South, just 4 years after its dismissal was achieved, sent and proposed a reunion to the Synod of the West and the Synod of New York. It didn't give, neither of the books that I was that I'm pulling this material from gave a reason for the Synod of the South doing this or proposing this. But the Synod of the West stated that it could not tolerate the now increased liberalism of the Synod of New York, and further efforts fell apart after 1831, when the Synod of the South, which had opposed slavery to that point, now they were slave owners. They were opposed to slavery. They were different ministers and congregations preached differently, but in general, progressive manumission was seen as the most progressive freeing of the slaves was seen as the most compassionate way of doing it. But then in 1831, the Northern Associate Synod passed an act requiring immediate manumission. So there had been some congregations in the Carolinas that had not come out with the Synod of the Carolinas and formed the Synod of the South. They had stayed with the Synod of New York, now called the Associate Synod in the North, and the ones in the Carolinas that had not stayed with the South were calling themselves at the time the Associate Presbytery. But when the Associate Synod said, all right, all the slaves are free right now, or directed immediate freeing of all of their slaves, then those congregations in the Carolinas came out and came back into the Associate Reformed Synod of the South. I don't know what y'all's educational background is. I was educated in the North, and I received a half an education, or maybe less. We'll be generous. We'll say a half an education as far as this period of the history of our country. Robert E. Lee, was a West Point professor who lost his mind for his state and defended the Neanderthal bigots of the South, who, thank God, we crushed them. That's not exactly the language that's used up there, but that's the impression that's given that I grew up getting in class. Robert E. Lee, in reality, was a very godly man. He wasn't Associate Reformed Presbyterian, but to give you an idea of the difference between immediate manumission, immediate freeing of a slave, and a more compassionate approach, Lee inherited a number of slaves with his wife, and he had a number of slaves in his plantation. At the time, it was illegal to educate them, but he wanted to liberate them in a way that they could provide for themselves. So what he did was he assigned slaves to attend the school on the plantation, to be attendants in the school until they received some education. And then he gave them a piece of the land and gave them their freedom and hired them. This didn't leave a number of now his freedmen who were employees. They still, upon the Emancipation Proclamation, they took off with all their friends, thinking they were going to go somewhere and get great work. And it wasn't long before the vast majority of them were back at Arlington, requesting that they have their job back, because what had been done for them in giving them skill and giving them property in this progressive attempt to improve their position was much better than what had been done for those who were freed overnight with no sense of personal responsibility, no education, no job. Anyway, that's the kind of thing that I did not learn about in the schooling that I got growing up. I had to be reeducated when I went to seminary in Mississippi. All that to say that 20 years ago, if I had read this, they had a problem with immediate freeing of the slaves. I would have said, oh, yep, those bad guys, and they're wanting to keep them a little longer. But there is actually wisdom and compassion involved. One of the things, though, that came out of the Northern churches directing this immediate manumission, this immediate freeing of slaves, was it really consolidated the Synod's Southern identity to have churches coming back into their synod that were doing so over a an issue that was very geographically aligned and increasingly polarizing. The Synod of the South still had this great need for ministers. One of its most educated ministers, Reverend Presley, was at that time pastoring a congregation in Due West, which, by the way, I had never heard of Due West until I became ARP. Due West is where Erskine is, and he agreed with the seminary to take on a position in 1837 as a theological instructor. His academy was at first called Clark and Erskine Seminary, and the synod actively sought others to come and teach with him, and they had enough faculty by 1839 for a reorganization and expansion of Clark and Erskine Seminary, and then by 1843, its name was changed to Erskine College. All this time, they had what are called mission stations or preaching stations, places where there was not enough of a congregation. It would be a mission station. If there was enough of a congregation that was generally ruling elder-led, but they didn't have enough ministers to supply them, you'd have a preaching station. When Hopewell began, I believe it was called the Western Mission Station. We were cutting edge, as far west as you could get. 1806, I believe, the first families from Mecklenburg that were associate reformed had come and settled this area and started what would end up being the Hopewell Church. So until they had more ministers, what they would do is established ministers, their vacation once a year would be to go circuit riding for a month. And he would take off, just like it sounds, he would ride on his horse, and he would minister to multiple congregations, multiple mission stations or preaching stations on a Lord's Day, and then he would do follow-up ministry among whoever had attended the worship and the preaching on that day for the rest of the week. Next Lord's Day, he would go on to the next group of mission stations and preaching stations. That is an exhausting, just to me, it sounds like an exhausting vacation. But it was necessary at the time because they didn't have, they didn't have access to a quality seminary until they formed their own at Erskine to produce evangelists who could be out evangelizing full time. What they had was their existing ministers, and they recognized that the work of an evangelist was something that ministers were called to, and that's what they did for 1 month a year. So that was, you had that strategy stacked up against some of the things that were hindering the growth of the church, and it did grow, just not at the speed at which evidently they had hoped. In 1837, when there were four ministers in Tennessee, they formed the Tennessee Presbytery. And then in 1842, the Alabama Presbytery was formed. The Alabama Presbytery didn't do very well. It was eventually dissolved and then united to the Tennessee Presbytery in 1886, which is now we have the Tennessee Alabama Presbytery. That's our presbytery. Were you going to say something about the ARP and the war?
Yes.
Sure. We got 4 minutes.
Okay. So this is a little bit different because this is what I've got history-wise written by an ARP minister. But when when the General Associated Reformed Presbyterian Church, which was comprised of the South, Synod of the South, Synod of the West, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, they had decided that they were going to join the, what we call now the USA Church. But they gave all four synods the option to join or to form their own. So when that took place, Pennsylvania joined the mainline church, New York and Ohio or the West separated, and the South. So as Pastor James had said, there were quite a few seceders and covenanters in the Church of the South. And the seceders were vehemently opposed to slavery and that it should go away right then and there. And so many of them left. And the reason why they left is because the Synod of the South would not come out and say slavery is absolutely should be done away with now. Rather, what they chose to do, and actually the Synod of the South was, they were at the leading edge of doing this. Their ministers were instructed to teach those in their congregation that owned slaves, which if you remember up until 3 years ago, we had a balcony up here that had numbers on it where all the slaves sat. But what they were taught, the ministers taught the slave owners that they were to teach that their slaves had a soul, that they were responsible for their souls and their care, that they were not to split them as far as families and things because that was a covenant union and that they were responsible for those things, and that they were to teach them and they were to care for them just as they would their own children. Well, because of that position, the reason why the ARP always called itself the Synod is because they always viewed that one day they would join, but go back to the original church. Well, when the Church of the West and the Church of New York split, they ultimately came together and formed what we call United Presbyterian. And the ARP wanted to become a part of that. But because of the position that the ARP church took, providentially, they refused to let them join. Had they done that, the ARP wouldn't be in existence today. So through the providence of God, we're here today for that position. So we don't know how God works, but he does. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess we don't have that much time. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, with colleges, there was another college formed here in the West called Presley College in 1919. It was formed in Fayetteville, and it made it 10 years, and then they closed it down. But it was an ARP college.
Okay. Did you hear that? From 1919 to, I guess, 29? There was another college later. All right. Lowry, will you pray for us?